A number of years ago, I was bushwalking on the Fraser Nay Peninsula, and was on the way up. It was an interesting journey getting up there. I was travelling with our very own Dan Pastor, and the weather. I remember it was probably about 35 degrees on this day. And he had a Ford Laser or something like that at the time, with air conditioning that wasn't working. I remember that. And I remember we had somebody with us that's known to many of you, a pastor friend of mine, Kev Wilcock, and a friend of our church from years back. And if you know Kev, you sort of understand how the trip would have unfolded. So we're heading off on a bushwalk, which actually sort of became a sort of a food and wine experience on the way up there. And we got to commence the bushwalk much later than we had intended. And the issue for me was that I had a flu that sort of, it was quite a bad flu, but I was never one to sort of not do something that I decided to do. And you know, that feeling like, oh, you know, when you get started, it'll be all right. Has anyone done that? And, you know, I reckon once we get walking, I'll shake this flu off a bit. Anyway, and after our trip up there and lots of food and all that sort of thing, and we start walking and I'm feeling really faint. I certainly wasn't particularly fit at this period of my life. That wasn't helping either. But I just wasn't doing well. And so the journey we were supposed to walk, if anyone knows the area, we're supposed to walk from the Fraser Nay walks there where you start the Wineglass Bay walk. We were supposed to walk over and around and down Hazards Beach, and we were going to camp there. And the next day we were going to walk up over Mount Fraser Nay, Mount Graham. Anyway, we didn't even make it to Hazards Beach. We found another spot to stop and camp because I just wasn't doing well. Like, I could hardly walk. And so we stopped and we camped there, and, oh yeah, I'll feel better in the morning, you know, yeah, I'll be right, boys. And so we did that, and we got going in the morning, and we start walking up over Mount Fraser Nay. And as we're walking, you know, we've got these packs on. And it was a short walk, but because it was a short walk, we thought, that's all right. We don't have to do all the good bushwalking stuff. And, you know, we had lots of food, and we sort of had heavy food rather than light food. And Kev had insisted on buying bottles of wine on the way up, and they were in the pack. And, the packs were full, and they were heavy. And on the Fraser Nay Peninsula, there's nowhere to get water, so you've got to carry water. So we all had quite a bit of water on board as well. And as we're going up, I'm just getting slower and slower and slower, to the point, you know, where I thought, I'm actually not going to make it up over here. And you know, Dan and Kev, they were fine, you know, they were firing. And so what we did is, you know, we unloaded my pack and pretty much everything that we could, you know, all the water and food and stuff we actually took out and we put in their packs and lightened my load and put it in their packs. And I did. I made it up over both mountains and down the other side and eventually back over to Wineglass Bay. But it was only the fact that somebody came alongside me and carried my load, if you like, over that mountain that meant that I got there. If that had left me like that, I don't reckon I would have actually made it. I was feeling, you know, that weak and that faint because I wasn't in a good way. But it was the fact that they came alongside, that they actually took some weight off me and carried it themselves, that meant that I got over the mountain, over that horrible, horrible stretch. Now, it's funny, isn't it? Like, I think back to then, and your situation changes so much. Because I'm in a different place now, and mostly when you do a bushwalk, you hopefully don't have the flu. But now, I would actually walk up over that mountain with a relatively heavy pack on, and I would quite enjoy it. And I would actually enjoy the walk, and I'd enjoy the push and the strain, and it actually wouldn't stress me that much, because I'm much fitter and I'm in a different place, and I'm actually quite used to doing that sort of thing. Now, there are seasons in life where we're all going to be in different places. You know, there are some times where, you know, you are ready. You are ready to climb the mountain. You're ready to go up. You are ready to go over. There are times where somebody else is like, you know what? I just don't feel like I can take another step. And as we go on this journey that we're on as a church, it's just important that we do it together. And it's important to understand that there are some of us that are going to feel strong. There are some of us going to be full of faith. And there are others that are actually going to need somebody to come alongside and say, I'm going to help you get there. And I want to talk this morning out of Nehemiah chapter 5. We've been looking at Nehemiah on this journey. And this is a really interesting part of this book. So Nehemiah gets to Jerusalem and starts the wall, the job of rebuilding the wall of Jerusalem. And they're doing an amazing job. You know, they were under incredible opposition. They'd been ridiculed. They had this guy, you know, Sanballat and Geshem and all these people that were, you know, they were actually physically attacking them. But a lot of the time they were bringing ridicule. They were bringing dissension. They were just doing all sorts of things to make this job very difficult. And they continued to get it done. They continued to get the job done. They continued to get it built. At times they were, you know, these guys are building with a, you know, a trowel in one hand to lay the bricks and a Colt pistol in the other. No, that's right. No, a sword, a spear in the other hand. They were doing what they needed to do to get it done. And I'm sure the progress was a bit slower than it would have been if they didn't have that opposition. But as you read Nehemiah, you don't read that there is a major problem in getting it done. And all of a sudden it gets to a point where Nehemiah's got to address some stuff because the work had basically come to a halt. And it came to a halt not as a result of external pressure, but it actually came to a halt not through the attacks of the enemy, not through carefully crafted plans from those on the outside, but it actually came to a halt through internal strife. It actually came to a halt through what was happening on the inside rather than what was going on the outside. And you will find that if you are in unity, if you are together on the inside, whether I'm talking about an organization, a church, a family, a business, or you as an individual, when you actually are unified in yourself, when you're unified as a family, when we're unified as a church, when we are together as an organization, there is almost no pressure from the outside that can bring you undone. But while we stay together internally, it's amazing what can come externally, and we can deal with it and we can get through it. And right at this point, Nehemiah knew that this whole project was under more threat than ever because the problem was not external, the problem was internal. Whenever there is a problem internal, we've actually got to give it a lot of attention. We've got to take it seriously and we've got to decide that we're going to deal with it. You see, building projects are so often constrained, held up, or even aborted due to lack of money. Does anyone remember, where are our Kingston people? There was some units that you see just as you go up the southern outlet, in the blue ones, in that Dunearn area. And if you remember rightly, because my in-laws used to own a unit just above them, and I'm sure what was going on here was devaluing the whole area. But somebody started building these units you saw from the highway. The project started. I reckon they sat there in a semi-finished state with people sort of perhaps even squatting in them. I'm not sure quite what was going on, but there was sort of life around, but these things weren't finished. They were a long way from finished. And I reckon they sat there for 3 or 4 years in that state. Now, obviously, somebody ran out of money or somebody couldn't get something through that they wanted to, you know, and that project just sat there. And I've noticed that, you know, 12 months or so ago, they got finished off. They don't look great, but they're better than they were. If you own them, I'm very sorry. M- Money often stops building projects. But this job that Nehemiah was doing, money wasn't the issue. Because that wall, isn't that amazing? That wall that they were building around Jerusalem was actually paid for by the king of Persia. When the king of Persia released Nehemiah from his own court to go and take on this project, he actually gave him the resources he needed to get it done. So the job was paid for by the king. Now, where there is, and I believe this to be true, where there is a God-centered, God-given vision, it will be paid for by the king. It will be paid for by our King Jesus. And so often it's not actually that we're struggling and we're trying to find money to finish a project. I actually think at what was happening here was Nehemiah actually had a money problem, but it wasn't about the money to finish the project. The money problem was there were a whole lot of people living in Jerusalem that didn't have enough money. And there were a few people that had a fair bit of money. And those that had a fair bit were pretty much almost extorting those that didn't have enough. They were lending them money. They were charging them obscene interest rates to the point that these people actually had to sell their own family into slavery just to survive. While this was going on, they're trying to build a wall. And so they come to Nehemiah and they say, "Hey, we're working hard here. We're sowing into our future. We believe in this project. We believe in this vision. We know why we're doing it. But you know what? There's something that's not right. We actually can't survive. We can't do that." Like me trying to get up over Mount Fraser and Mount Graham with a heavy pack. They were struggling to keep going under this weight, this unbearable debt that was weighing them down, that was destroying their families. See, organisations, businesses, families, churches and individuals come unstuck, as I've already mentioned, through internal strife rather than external pressure. But Nehemiah, he was wise enough to address what was going on here. He sees what's happening and he acts swiftly and he addresses it. And it says this in Nehemiah 5 verse 6. He says, "When I heard their complaints, I was angry." Who's ever been angry as a leader? Ask my team. Never me. "After thinking it over, I spoke against the nobles and the officials and I told them, 'You are hurting your own relatives by charging them interest when they borrow money.' Then I called a public meeting to deal with the problem. At the meeting I said to them, 'We're doing all we can to redeem our Jewish relatives who've had to sell themselves to pagan foreigners, but you are selling them back into slavery. How often must we redeem them?' And they had nothing to say in their defence. Then I pressed it further. 'What you are doing is not right.' Should you not walk in fear of our God in order to avoid being mocked by enemy nations?" See, Nehemiah's response was quick, but it was also considered. He says, "This is not right. Stop it. Unload your brothers and sisters." In other words, don't put more weight and pressure and load on them than what they've already got. And sometimes in the church, we can unwittingly load up people rather than unloading. I'm not just talking about, oh, can you do this or do that? You know, there are expectations. There are things that we put on people. You know, somebody gets saved and they come into a church and they've got all this stuff going on. And we say, oh, great, you're a Christian. And we get around them. And then we start the discipleship process. And then we put this weight of expectation on them. Oh, yeah, you need to stop doing that. And you know, all this sort of stuff. And we don't want to hurt anybody, but we unwittingly put this load on people, and it's almost like they can't stand up under it. And you know, we've got to make sure that we don't put a load on people, but we actually lighten the load so that we can maintain unity. So how do we lighten the load and maintain unity? Well, Nehemiah became angry because they had a money problem that led to yet a lack of unity among God's people. The unity was more precious than any amount of money. So I reckon first and foremost, how do we lighten the load? I think we've got to replace place relationship above riches. Place relationship above riches. Sometimes we can spend all our time, you know, in your family. Often, isn't it ironic that the time when you're trying to, young families, you're trying to get it together, you're trying to do what you do, you're trying to set things up for the future, and often that's the very time your family needs you. And I know it's a difficult tension. I know it's a time you've got to put in and you've got to work hard, and it's hard to get that balance. But often that's the time where we can... I've spoken to so many people that have given everything, you know, blokes, given everything to set their family up during that season, only to find that when they get through it, they don't have a family anymore. Let's place relationship above riches. I'm not talking about avoiding that and saying, oh, we don't care. Yeah, be smart. Let's work the way that we need to. But we've got to have priorities here. We've got to have the important relationships in our life above money. Unity is more important than money, but so often it's money that leads to disunity. See, money problems are rarely just money problems. Who thinks if they had enough money, you know, things would be a lot better and your problems would go away? We've all thought that at times, haven't we? And there's a bit of truth in it. You have more money, you could do more things and have a bit more fun, all sorts of stuff. But it's a proven fact that when people win the lottery, their lives generally don't get better. Maybe for a time. You see, if money problems were there before you get money, they're still going to be there after you get more money. If we can't honour God with a smaller amount of money, it's not going to be easier with a bigger amount. It's actually going to be harder. Did you know what? Think about this. If you're getting $60 a week as a student or a high school person, you know, you got your first job, you're getting $60 a week. You're working one shift on the checkout. Or is it two gain or to get $60? I don't know. And you think, oh, I haven't got much money. I want to tithe on this. $60. I'm going to put $6 in the collection. Ooh. You know what? If I was on a grand, oh, gee, it'd be easy, wouldn't it? I'm on a grand. Now I've got to put $100 in. Ooh. What could I do with $100? Grand. Most families need around about that to live okay. But if I was on $2,000, it would be a lot easier, wouldn't it? There'd be a lot more space. But $200? Ooh. See? Yeah. Then you're on the big bickies. Whoa. $500,000 a year. just gets harder. Money problems don't get easier with more. It's actually just about starting where we are. You see, and the money problem isn't generally the problem. It's always a heart problem. So Nehemiah realized they had a money problem. But it was actually, he didn't need more money to finish the wall. He actually had to address a heart problem that was causing a money problem that was about to actually cause a project to stop because it was causing disunity. Let's address the heart problem. So how do we lighten the load? How do we maintain unity? Verse 6 says, when I heard the complaints, I was very angry. So I went and kicked some backside. The first thing he actually did is he listened. And I think if we're going to maintain unity, we've got to listen. Point two is that we need to listen. To maintain unity, listen. Over the years, I've done a lot of driving in cars and trucks and bits and pieces where we've had big loads on. And often, you know, when I was younger, we'd be off doing all sorts of weird and wonderful things, and we'd have cars loaded up, you know, to the extent that they perhaps weren't designed to do, and, you know, carrying all sorts of things, you know, motorbikes and fuel and all this stuff, and we'd be driving way up into the bush somewhere, and you know, and generally driving up steep hills to get there. And as you start to pull this load up a steep hill, if you're a little bit aware, you'll notice that the tone of the vehicle actually starts to change. And the first sign that something is gone from just doing it hard to really struggling is you get a different sound. You know, the motor might start to sound different, or you might start to hear something in the drive chain that just means all the bits that make things turn around. You might start to hear something in that area that just isn't quite right as it was. And if you're smart, you listen. And if you're even a bit smarter, which wasn't always me, I just think, oh yeah, we'll get there, we'll be right. But if you're a bit smarter, you respond to what you hear. In other words, you don't keep pushing when something is not right. And I think if we're going to maintain unity, we've actually got to listen to the sound. We've got to understand what's going on. We've got to hear what people are saying. The first sign that there is a problem is generally a change in sound. And Nehemiah, he was a big picture guy. But he'd been a cupbearer for the king of Persia. He had to also be across the detail. He actually had to be very aware of the sounds and the little things, because that little thing could have brought death to the king, and that would bring death to him. So he was a big picture guy. He saw what could happen in Jerusalem. He brought all these things together. He did his planning in the big picture stuff. He was a strategist, but he was also concerned with the detail, to the point that when he heard complaints, he actually listened to find out what was going on behind the complaints. When people came to him, he listened, he understood, and he actually had a human response. He wasn't just a steely leader that, oh yeah. They came to him and they said, we've been oppressed. These guys are breaking our backs. You know, we can't do this anymore. We're losing our family. And what was his response? It was very human. He got angry. He said, this hurts me. He said, I can't believe that my Jewish brothers and sisters would do this to each other. I am angry. He had a human response. And the reason he got angry was what was happening wasn't right, and it was motivated by greed, and it threatened their unity and ultimately their future. So how do we listen? What are the sounds that actually threaten unity? I think complaints When people are complaining, you know, there's something often behind it. You know, as leaders, sometimes we can get so sick of people complaining. And there are times we've actually got to choose to set a culture where we don't complain about everything and we see a bigger picture. But when there are lots of complaints, there's often something that's not quite right. And we've got to be smart enough to look beyond the complaint to what is going on. Indifference. You know, when people, their responses are indifferent, you know, something isn't right. Something's not going on. And, you know, in your workplace or your family, if everything's indifferent, often you've actually got a bigger problem than when people are complaining. Because often people complain. When they get sick of complaining, that's just like, whatever. Whatever. Or then there's the snapping. Snappy people. Sometimes when I get angry or get a bit stressed, I get a bit snappy. Anybody else like that, you know, can tend to get a little bit snappy. Just happens to me. Do any of you blokes find it hard? I mean, I don't know if it's true, but they, you know, they say the girls multitask better. Alex does not want to be big on typical stereotypes. So I don't get away with that stuff much. But I actually do find it hard to stretch my attention across a lot of things. So you got one little boy wanting you to fix the iPad, and you got another little boy wanting you to fix whatever he's doing. And then you got a dog that just pooed on the floor. And then you... Yeah, and then you get a phone call at that time. And then you've got your wife saying something that's really important. And I find it hard not to get snappy. I know you guys do better, but that I'm putting it out there. Dave's therapy session. But, you know, when there's that going on, obviously people are being stressed. There's snappiness. You know, a while back when we had Scott Wilson down here talking to our leaders, he talked about the difference between a stretch and a snap. You know, we're in a season as a church and as people where there is stretch. And what we've got to do is we've got to allow the stretch without the snap. In other words, knowing how far we can stretch to before that, we don't want to take people to the point where things snap. You know, we can all stretch a bit more. We can all add more, but we don't have... You know, our God has unlimited capacity, but we don't. And so let's make sure that we're not loading people up to the point where they snap. All right, how do we lighten the load? I think as Nehemiah did here, he got angry, but he responded rather than reacting. So, you know, if we want to get through seasons where we are being stretched, where stuff is going on, let's respond rather than react. It is so... I'm a reactor. Any other nuclear reactors here? You know, so often it's like... I'm like Nehemiah. You know, somebody comes to you with something and it's like, that's not right. What's going on? You're a flipping idiot. And I don't do it much now, but there were a time in my life earlier on, particularly when I was, just let me get on the phone and sort that out. Right, actually, I'll be better while I'm angry. I'll get a better result while I'm angry. I'm going to do it now. Now, you don't want to be, you can tell, you don't want to be on the end of that, do you? So I've actually had to learn that's not my best time to respond. And Nehemiah did exactly that. He was angry. And there was nothing wrong with him being angry. And sometimes you'll feel angry. And the fact that you're angry in a moment, there's nothing wrong with that. But he responded. He actually took some time and he prayed and he considered what his response was rather than reacting. So let's consider what people are really saying and address what they're really saying rather than what we feel they are saying in the moment. Did you know, for me too, I've got a little bit of dyslexia, as some of you very much know. And I can sometimes, you know, particularly in email, I can get an email from somebody and it's like, what? What's this? And I haven't even read it properly, and I'm ready to get on the phone and sort it out before I've even read the email properly, because I'm actually too angry to read the email. I know you guys don't have that, but anyway, I'm continuing my therapy session here. So you can just sort of take this in case it ever happens to you. But how often do we actually need in that moment just to say, and you know, not all of us are as perhaps fiery as me and all that, but we all need to be able to respond rather than react. You know, you mightn't react out of anger, you might react out of hurt, or you might react out of insecurity, or you might react out of something that is going on in your world. Let's just take time to consider and respond rather than react. Something I actually had to do when we didn't have our kids with us, and we were in a season of a lot of grief, and I did some work with a really good counsellor in that season, and something she helped me with was just because in that season I wanted to react. Problem was, there was nowhere to react to. But what she helped me understand was that my anger wasn't necessarily bad. And the problem for me was that anger is such an isolating thing. You see, Nehemiah got angry, but he didn't feel bad in his anger. He actually felt quite right, because he was responding to something that wasn't right. But he actually took the time before God to respond in a way that, as you read on, brings a great result. So let's, in this season, I'm happy to talk about this stuff now, because I'm not seeing problems. I'm not seeing people going around getting antsy with one another and stuff going on. I would actually rather talk about this stuff in the cool light of day before we get into a next season, when we're on the move and we've got stuff going on and there's more pressure on. Let's actually get our heads in the right space now rather than later. That's why I'm talking about it. I'm actually not addressing stuff that anybody's doing wrong, because you guys are actually doing really great. But let's hear what's behind the sound. Let's look in people rather than at them. Let's respond rather than reacting. So Nehemiah, he approached the problem head on. He didn't, even in that, he didn't back away from it. He didn't sweep it under the carpet. He actually brought truth into the situation. He let the light shine on the issue that threatened their future. Verse 9, he says, when I pressed further, he said, what you're doing is not right. Should you not walk in the fear of our God in order to avoid being mocked by enemy nations? So he hit it hard. He hit it head on, but he took time to consider what was right, and then he went there. And then he goes on and he recounts this. This is the end of that chapter. He says, for the entire 12 years that I was governor of Judah, from the 12th year to the 32nd year of the reign of King Artaxerxes, neither I nor my officials drew on our official food allowance. The former governors, in contrast, had laid heavy burdens on the people, demanding a daily ration of food and wine besides the 40 pieces of silver. Even their assistants took advantage of the people. But because I feared God, I did not act this way. And if you read on a bit, you find out that he actually went further. He said, I didn't tax the people, because he was in his rights. It was totally normal and understood and accepted that he would have put a tax on those people to maintain his office and his position and his wage and support what he was doing. That was normal. But he actually said, no, because I believe in this so much, I didn't tax the people. And then if you go on a little bit more in that chapter, you find out he says, and on top of all this, he says, I fed all these people every day. You know, we fed, we had all these with these cows and poultry and extra wine and everything that I was bringing into my house so that I could be hospitable, so that I could actually host visiting dignitaries, so I could do all the stuff, but I didn't tax the people. And we're not always, not all of us are in a position to do that. He'd worked in the king's palace and he'd obviously been very astute with his own wealth and his own income. And he was in a position where he could actually use that to build the kingdom. Isn't that a great place to be in? But we're not always there in every part of our life. But what he decided he would do was not load up the people. He was actually going to be an unloader rather than a loader. And I think number four, if we want to maintain unity in these seasons, you've got to let your life speak. Let your life speak as an example. Jesus is the ultimate lifter of burdens, isn't he? Nehemiah refused to add burdens to the people. When we're in this season, let's let our lives speak. Let's let the way that we live actually speak. So often we can feel like, yeah, we've got to say this, or we've got to do that, or we've got to, you know, go and address that. And in leadership, there are times we do. There are times, you know, over the years I've had to have lots and lots of difficult conversations. I'm not someone that loves them. But I know for the sake of where we're going that at times we've got to go there. But I know that my life will actually speak louder, much louder, than any difficult conversation I can have. My life, the way that I live, the things, the values that I choose to put in place, the example that I set, will actually speak much louder than anything that I can say, anything that I can address. Yeah, Nehemiah, he actually addressed this stuff. He said, it's not right. You need to turn around. The people said, yeah. They responded really well to him. They said, yep. We get it. We've hurt you. We're going to stop taxing these people. We're going to pay the money back. We're going to get on with it. And they got unity again and they got the job done. But it was actually his example, because he wasn't asking them to do something that he wasn't. He wasn't saying, it's like us as leaders here standing up and saying, you know, giving an offering talk when we're struggling to give ourselves. It's like you know, you leading a connect group and saying, hey, we've got to, you know, we've got to be more hospitable, and it's like you're struggling to do that in your own world. You know, it's actually the life that we live that speaks much louder than the things that we say. And I know I'm only telling you something really basic there, but it's actually the basic things that make the biggest difference. It's some of those simple things that actually ring and speak louder than anything else. The team want to join me, please. Jesus is the ultimate lifter of burdens. Let's join Jesus in his work in lightening loads. As we come alongside, as we help lift and remove burdens that people are carrying, I wonder at the moment, who actually needs you to come alongside them, like I did when I was struggling to get up over Mount Fraser with the flu and a whole lot of stuff in my pack that threatened to cause me to stop. Who needs you to come alongside in this season and say, hey, let me take some of that. Let me take some of that. Let me pray with you. Let me stand with you as we declare for your breakthrough. Let me come alongside as you're doing it tough. Let me come and help really practically as you're emotionally thin, or as your health's struggling, or or as the teenagers are in a really difficult spot, let me come alongside. As we go on this journey together, let's just look around at some of our people that are carrying a lot. So how can we come alongside and lighten the load on them? How can I come alongside someone like Elizabeth with all sorts of stuff that she carries? How can I pry some of that from Elizabeth? We're going to do this together. We'll get to the next season with our stuff, with our brokenness, with our insecurities, with our egocentric natures, with our hurts, with our stuff. If we just come alongside, lift the load. Give you a moment right now. Haven't got a massive group here this morning, so we can do stuff like this. Just as the Holy Spirit's here speaking to you, maybe in this moment you just need to come alongside somebody. Be open right now, but if you need to come and stand alongside somebody and just pray for them, why don't we do that?